normal state of mind. So I did, and in doing so, I learned a deeper truth about war. She punished those who flirted with her by making them like herself. Once you opened the door to the animal, there was no shutting it. I never stopped being an expert shot when the situation called for it, but I was never again purely a sniper. I pretended I had lost my edge, that I could no longer be trusted with the most critical skills. It was a plausible enough lie. Snipers were insanely superstitious, and many did develop some psychosomatic block that stopped them functioning. I moved through different units, requesting operational transfers that each time took me closer to the front. I developed a proficiency with weapons that went far beyond mere marksmanship, a fluidity of ease like a preternaturally skilled musician who could pick up any instrument and make it sing. I volunteered for deep insertion missions that put me behind enemy lines for weeks at a time, living off carefully measured field rations. Sky's Edge biosphere was superficially Earth-like, but down on the level of cell chemistry it was completely incompatible, containing almost no native flora which could be safely eaten without either providing zero nourishment or triggering a fatal anaphylactic reaction. During those long episodes of solitude, I allowed the animal to emerge again, a feral mind state of almost limitless patience and tolerance for discomfort. I became a lone gunman, no longer receiving orders via the usual chain of command, but from mysterious and untraceable sources in the militia hierarchy. My missions became stranger, their goals less fathomable. My targets shifted from the obvious, mid-ranking NC officers, to the seemingly random, but I never questioned that there was a logic behind the kills. That it was all part of some devious and painstakingly planned scheme. Even when, on more than one occasion, I was required to put slugs in certain targets who wore the same uniform as I did, I assumed they were spies, or potential traitors, or, and this was the least palatable of conclusions, just loyal men who had to die because in some way their living had conflicted with the scheme's inscrutable progress. I no longer even cared whether my actions served any kind of greater good. Eventually I stopped taking orders and began soliciting them, severing connections with the hierarchy and taking contracts from whoever would pay me. I stopped being a soldier and became a mercenary. Which was when I met Kaweya for the first time. "My name is Sister Duscha," said the older of the two mendicants, a thin woman with an unsmiling demeanor. "You may have heard of me. I'm the hospice's neurological specialist, and I'm afraid, Tana Mirabel, that there's something quite seriously wrong with your mind." Duscha and Emilio were standing in the chalet's doorway. Only half an hour earlier I had told Emilio of my intention to leave Idlewild within the day. Now Emilio looked apologetic. "I'm very sorry, Tana, but I had to tell her." "No need to apologize, sister," Duscha said, brushing imperiously past her subordinate. "Whether he likes it or not, you did precisely the right thing by informing me of his plans. Now then, Tana Mirabel, where shall we begin?"
"Whatever you like. I'm still leaving."
One of the ovoid-headed robots trotted in behind Duscha, clicking across the floor. I made a move to get off the bed, but Duscha placed a firm hand on my thigh. "No. We'll have none of that nonsense. You're going nowhere for the time being."
I looked at Emilia. What was all that about being able to leave whenever I wanted?
"Oh, you're free to leave, Tana."
But even as Emilia said it, she didn't sound completely convincing.
"But he won't want to when he knows the facts," Duscha said, lowering herself onto the bed.
"Let me explain, shall I?"